Let's get right into it.
So, can you please share a bit of yourself, your academic background, and you know, what was your major, what you majored in?
Yeah, I started here 2016. I was majoring in computer science, and my project was related to applied learning sciences and pedagogy. I transferred to San Jose State 2019, and I finished up with a degree in computer science. And my senior project was also related to the learning sciences.
Okay. What inspired you to pursue higher education?
So many of the problems that I witness, that we all witness, mm-hmm. surface in today's society and within our local communities, I can map directly back to what happens or what doesn't happen inside classrooms. And I'm not saying that all problems will be solved with innovative, creative, and student-centered problems, but when I think about the underbelly of society and the people who are most vulnerable to be left behind and to fall through the cracks, I can't help but think of another institution that can serve those populations other than public education.
Well said. So I'm just going to more dive into like the leadership like aspect of this, because, you know, this is like part of like the workshop. So, you know, just because spearheading this workshop is an admirable task. So could you tell me because I know you said like, you know, that, like public education is, you know, serves like, you know, like sort of like these like underserved, like, you know, these like underserved communities. So could you tell me what motivations prompted you to take on this project?
Scholarships and maximizing my financial aid, which includes work study, internships, and fellowships, have played a huge role in my undergraduate journey. I personally have earned probably close to $40,000 if I combine all money earned related financial aid. Those are not loans, right? Money that is straight into my pocket. And I say that because if I can do it, students can do it better, right? So I owe the people who introduced me to scholarships. In this case, it'd be Jeff Anderson and Katie Ha, who's not at our main campus anymore, but Jeff's in our math department. They introduced me to scholarships, and that's when I began getting better at applying and creating it, making it as a habit.
Since, you know, this is a workshop, you know, for students, you know, has there been any, like, challenges that you identify that students commonly face when applying scholarships, and how does the workshop address these challenges?
Beautiful question, Emilio. I am technically required in these quote-unquote workshops and in-reach events at our school to make a presentation about scholarships. While I'm totally okay with making a presentation, I worry about the effectiveness that it will have for the diverse students who have individual personalized needs that end up attending these workshops. From a facilitator standpoint, one of the struggles is meeting students where they are in a group setting is very difficult. You'd be lucky actually if you do that well for one student. That's called tutoring and mentoring. It's hard enough in a one-on-one space. As soon as that number exceeds more than one student, there's a lot of things that come into consideration into how to make the most use out of that time budgeted. From a student standpoint, one of the most important things I think they can do is begin applying and taking that application process seriously. And treating it as, I don't know if I want to say treat it as a class, but block out 30 minutes, if they have 30 minutes, if not 15 minutes a week, to think about scholarships, to do the reading necessary. In our case, it would be through Academic Works and customizing the my general application and customizing my story to increase their chances of getting money. But this habit extends elsewhere, right? But for students, the most important thing is for them to apply, because there are many scholarships that don't get a single application, and that is money waiting to be earned.
Can you share like the current scholarship opportunities available for students that are academic and you know and being, currently being offered at Foothill or even like externally? You don't have to like name all of them, but just like the ones that you know I guess you maybe we'll talk about in these workshops.
Yeah, in the workshops, I really try to center the student needs, because some of them have essays from past years. Some of them, when they hear the word scholarships, they think are on loan. Some have never gone into office hours, and many scholarships will require a letter of recommendation, ideally from faculty members. Some have never visited our Writing and Learning Center and have not met the staff there who are capable of providing scholarship writing feedback. That is a short list to actually a much larger list of what's on students' minds when they come see me, when they come to the workshop and the event. There are over 20 to probably 30 scholarships that are hosted in the Academic Works application within the MyPortal. The tip that I have for students is to finish and submit a general application, which will not actually submit any of their scholarships, but it will get them to the next page where they can see more of their opportunities. They can use the Our Opportunities button to see scholarships that are listed, but in my experience, the best way to go about that is have a draft of the general application, hit finish and submit, not save and keep editing, but finish and submit, and it will populate, in my experience, more opportunities in the next page. So they're all there. It's worth, I would recommend creating one Google Doc and logging all the stories, all the requirements in one space, so that when students are drafting their My Story and editing their draft of My Story, I imagine students have more than one story they want to tell about their lives and career or academic professional goals. But I don't want them to replace one story with a new story, because then they lose all that time they spent writing that first one. So instead, just draw a line, start a new page, and write whatever new edits or new stories that come up.
How is the workshop structured to cater to students with varying backgrounds and interests?
What's funny about this is because we were just speaking about this, right, prior to this interview. But one of the most exciting things in my job, or I think any job as an educator, so someone working in education, is answering that question. So I understand not everyone hosts workshops, right? I understand there is tremendous value in being a good presenter and improving on presenting information in a concise and clear manner. But ultimately, information without contemplation is just information. And what's really interesting about our work in education is, how do we inspire and guide students to contemplate on not only curriculum, on not only classes, not only their ed plan, but on life? Because that's actually what's going to be required if we're serious about our mission statement, mm-hmm. if we're serious about getting students to continue to develop rare and valuable skills, so that they have more control and freedom over their lives after school, after college, after uni. That's what's required, right? So the real central question, I believe, that centers all of the educators that have been transformative in my life is, what are the conditions, environments, and relationships necessary for students to learn at their natural best? That is the question, right? Because information without contemplation is just
information.
Right. And if insert content is the medicine, then how do we create the headache? So you can do math, right? If math is the medicine, then where is the headache at? And there, for many students, there is no headache. The headache is actually the class, right? The headache is, now I'm trying to add the scholarship thing into their schedule. Mm-hmm. That's the headache. And the question is, how do we convince students to take the pill, right? To realize this medicine is not only preventative, but it is something that can open up more doors down the line.
I guess the question was more tailored, more like, it's like, oh, is there any like scholarships for like, say, like STEM, like creative majors and like that? So I guess like, were you
big time? Backgrounds? Big time, yeah. Almost every department has their own mm-hmm. scholarships listed. And to be honest, what might not be listed on Academics Works are specific department-wide scholarships,
okay.
right? So it's worth, students, if you're reading or listening to this, it's worth speaking with the staff and faculty that you know on campus, and asking, outside of academic works, are there scholarships that I can apply for? Mm-hmm. And or fellowships or internships, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think you actually answered my next question I was going to ask, because like, you went a lot into detail into that. Actually, two of my questions, actually. You kind of just covered all of that. I guess my next question is just like, are there specific strategies or advice for students from underrepresented groups, at least from you, just like to like in this process?
Yeah. Being able to nurture and develop a scholarship writing habit will require students to not feel like they're sinking in their classes. Mm-hmm. It is true that a student can maybe spend 10 hours this quarter on doing scholarships and maybe spend less than 10 hours on an actual class. And students will always do what they think is most important, right? Always. Mm-hmm. Could be YouTube, could be games, could be other leisure activities. My best advice for students is to realize the playing the game of scholarships is unlike any game that I've played. It is likely, I have coached students who have earned tens of thousands of dollars to write for 10 hours total, right? Over a span of a year. One of my colleagues, Marco from In-N-Out, he got a $50,000 Avid scholarship, and he probably spent less than 20 hours on that scholarship application. So there is so much money out there. I can't help but say at this point, scholarships is a stopgap measure to continue to underfund education, because the number of students who can't go to school because of the price and cannot go to school because of the cost of attendance and cost of living is quite high. And I think it's worth applying to scholarships, yes. But at the same time, for us, for other readers, how do we keep an eye on the policy decisions that continue to increase our cost of tuition at community college and elsewhere, and that continue to underfund the sector of education?
Mm-hmm. Well said. I think now, you definitely touched upon that too as well. And just to segue into that, what are the common mistakes or misconceptions students make when applying for scholarships, or how will the workshop address these issues as well too? Just because there's a lot of money out there, of course. So it's like a lot of students kind of just don't think that, oh, apply for the scholarship, they won't get it. But it's like, I feel like there's gonna be a lot of bumps in the road, while applying for scholarships. So yeah, are there any ones that you can identify at the top of your head?
Big ones. The short version of my story in scholarships, I applied here 2016. I submitted many applications through Academic Works. I got zero that year, okay? I got a handful more the next year I applied, and my third year I got a bunch. And I kept that habit when I went to San Jose State, and I got scholarships and fellowships and internships there. Mm-hmm. Some common myths, so another way to say myths are just false statements. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to share now. You need a 3.0 or higher to apply for scholarships. False, right? You need to write 4 essays to be able to compete for scholarships. False. In fact, for my academic works, oftentimes most of those scholarships just require one general essay. Mm-hmm. It's called the My Story essay. It's really important to respond to each of those three sentences in the prompt, because that's what committee members are looking for, that you respond to each of those three sentences in the My Story prompt. Another common myth is you need letters of recommendations. Well, I do think it's worth going into office hours and building those connections and relationships with teachers. Many scholarships don't actually require a letter of recommendation. Whether it's the grade standpoint, whether it's a financial need, here's another big one, that you need financial need to be able to apply for scholarships. Mm-hmm. That's not the case, right? You don't need to be, quote unquote, in a financial tough spot to apply for scholarships. I think it's just a wonderful way for students to become financially literate. I think scholarships is a gateway to financial literacy. And I believe deeply that financial literacy, if understood, can really inspire students to continue developing rare and valuable skills so that they don't have to be working 9 to 5 until they're 75 years old, right?
You can also answer my next question too as well. Will there be opportunities for students to receive individualized support or guidance during or after the workshops?
Absolutely. I try to work creatively to set up those connections and relationships because, like our college classes, the learning often occurs after the class ends. But if we can use that precious and rare class time well, we can set students up so that, one, they find value in the work that they're going to have to do, and two, not be alone in that process. Ultimately, this will be on the shoulders of students. I can never force students to collaborate or engage. But what I can do is help them find common ground, reduce the barriers of getting to know each other, find similar interests, and help them focus their efforts on what's most important. In this case, it's, you know, drafting the best My Story essay possible. Mm-hmm. But yes, if students are well, if they're able to come into the workshops, we do a lot of work in community, in small groups, so that hopefully after the workshop, they have at least began developing a small team of support to not feel alone in that process.
And just to kind of segue more into that, writing My Story and, you know, things like that. Can you share just some general tips and on crafting a compelling scholarship application?
Yeah, I was alluding to this earlier because I don't see your questions, right? So this is my first time just hearing them. Had I known this question was coming up, I wouldn't have said what I said earlier. But I think it's worth restating because it's super important. Mm-hmm. Many, many scholarships are often tossed into the recycling pile because the writers, in this case our students, mm-hmm. are not responding to each sentence of the prompt. Mm-hmm. If it were up to me, I think I would actually loosen that requirement, and I would also probably include some type of media that students can kind of upload, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's a short recording, but it's not up to me at the moment. So because that's the way it is now, it's super important that students respond to every aspect of each sentence of the 3 sentences of the My Story prompt. Simultaneously, for scholarships who require supplemental questions and have additional requirements, so sometimes it's short answers, right, or even another essay, as well as a letter of recommendation would be included in that, it's really important for students to click into those opportunities before February 2nd, because February 2nd is the day that thing closes. So they hopefully, the sooner the better, submit a draft of their general application, click into the actual scholarship opportunities that they meet minimum qualifications for, extract all and every supplemental requirement from those opportunities. So it's clear, right? Because when we extract information, we can then make decisions on that information, and not, it's not just sitting in some random thing called academic works, and have a document to draft the initial My Story and improve on those drafts of the My Story. Mm-hmm. But in short, please respond to every of those 3 sentences in the My Story prompt. And that's a habit, because when you do job stuff or other prompts that come up, mm-hmm. It's worth doing that.
So have you considered incorporating feedback for these applications, like in these workshops, or is that something that, you know, will be probably more like, or won't be added to that?
The most recent email I sent to advertise the workshop coming up tomorrow,
which I haven't read, by the way,
which I know you have not read, and I haven't read your questions, right? I actually honor and celebrate the students who stayed after with me for about over an hour to give me that feedback. Mm-hmm. And I hope the defensive coordinator for our football team can come to one of these. His name is Brandon Younger, but I literally call out in that email, I said, Brandon, I think that's called a post-game analysis, right? Because mm-hmm. I don't know if you know, like in sports, oftentimes they'll play a game and they'll watch it on tape, right? And then what I was getting is actually personalized coaching from students on what worked and what could have been better. So yes, I am always open to accepting student feedback, and this is where I see students as the best and brightest teachers undiscovered, right? Because they don't often see themselves with that. Like, I'm not a teacher, but the fact of the matter is, the sooner we can get students to believe that they have a huge, that they add huge value, the sooner that they will engage more authentically and significantly. So yes, the feedback. I'm open to feedback always.
Okay. That's good. It's good to know.
Yeah. I can't pay for the feedback though, because I'm broke, but yeah. I'm open to feedback always.
So how do you ensure that the workshop remains responsive to the evolving needs and expectations of students because of that?
This is what keeps the work in education fun. So one saying that grounds me in my work in service of students is good teaching requires nimbleness. And another really powerful saying is, I don't know if you've heard of this one, Emilio, but it's called the profession of teaching is what makes all other professions possible. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of that one?
No, I've not.
Yeah, it's a deep one. It requires some thinking about. But when that saying for me, teaching is not just like how leadership, right? It's not about title. It's more about impact than it is title. So we can come across a YouTube video on how to replace a toilet or how to replace a light bulb. And for that case, that person is my best teacher, because without that video, it might have taken me very long to make that project happen. Whether it's Khan Academy, whether it's OpenStax, open access resources to information, sometimes is more valuable than a synchronous live and direct lecture, right? Lectures. If you're a teacher reading about this, I highly recommend you consider alternative forms of instruction and alternative forms of assessment or grading, because the state of education is changing rapidly, but the principles of learning is not changing. Learning is hard. Learning requires leaving the comfort zone. Learning requires a ton of time and effort. So the real question is, what are the conditions to inspire students to stay in that sweet spot of their learning? And that's going to look different for all students. I'm not talking about learning styles, because that's actually been debunked. Of course, students have learning preferences, but the principles around learning have not changed since the start of mankind. Applied pedagogy is super exciting. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
The profession of teaching is what makes all other professions possible. And just like all sayings, it's not all true, right? But I think it's useful, because it's one of the reasons why we stay in this work. And it's one of the reasons why we have hope for a better world to come.
That's good. I want to, I know you mentioned that students can, go into office hours for from a professor or for any faculty to kind of give them that recommendation. But aside from that, how can faculty members actually support students in their scholarship applications beyond the workshop?
I have a ton of empathy for faculty and staff, especially on educational campuses, like our institution. If their email inbox looks anything like mine, I think they deserve 3 executive assistants and a raise. With that said, I know it's really hard to actually change faculty and staff because of the overwork problem. But for students, especially since I think earlier one of the questions is for underrepresented, right, marginalized students, one of the most valuable skills for me, in fact, it is probably the skill that kept me to persevere in my undergraduate degree as first generation in computer science, is scheduling in office hours times. I'm well aware there are sometimes office hours that professors have listed in their syllabus do not match the schedule that I have for that term, but it's still worth doing. Mm-hmm. If you can put the time and day, right, the dates into your actual weekly calendar, there's less of a barrier and there's less friction to actually going and making that introduction for whenever you have questions that arise. And to be honest, I would actually just go to your professor's office hours, even if you don't have questions, and just make an introduction. Mm-hmm. Because once I got to know my professors on a little bit more of a personal level, and I recognize this is all privilege, right? Because I'm not working. I'm not mining coal, right? I'm actually spending additional time in addition to classes and doing homework to actually have a conversation with my professor. So I recognize this is a privilege. Mm-hmm. But when you schedule it in, you make those introductions. Once I got to know my professors on a personal level, it helped me stay a little bit more accountable to do the hard work of sometimes the classes, right? Because we're going to have schoolwork that we're not going to want to do and that we have no understanding of why the heck it's assigned to us. But the truth is we're paying for the class, right?
Yeah.
We're paying with our most valuable resource, which is our time and oftentimes our money. So if we want to make the most out of our education, which is what I'm all about and what I think students are all about, going into office hours and getting to know professors on a personal level has really helped me with that. Of course, they should go to other student services such as tutoring and mentoring and build peer-to-peer relationships as well. But there's nothing like being able to like control the mind a little bit, right? Or have some influence on the mind of the actual person dictating your grade.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That's good. Well said. How will you measure the success of the workshop, and you know what are the outcomes that you're hoping to achieve for the participating students?
One fun way I measure the success of any workshop I host is the amount of smiles I get. Maybe it's because I'm a wannabe comedian. or maybe because humor and joy is used to heal from bad learning experiences. And I don't mean just in the classroom, right? I've had people with power over me communicate to me things where it made me feel like I'm dumb and I just can't learn stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the older I get, the more I realize it's just oftentimes that's a projection of their own past experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And two, the science of learning says otherwise. If we define learning as change, we all can change, right? We all have the ability to do that. It's hard to do, but if you believe you can't do it, then definitely that would make it even harder, right? I forget the question at the moment.
What's that?
I forget the question.
No, it's just like how will you measure the success?
Oh, that's right, that's right.
And you know what's the outcome you hope to achieve for students?
Yeah. So joy, right? Co-creating joy is one way I measure that. I think it's worth it, especially in today's trying times.
Mm-hmm.
Another way I measure that is students are opted in to tell me how things are going always, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I also get to check in on little cohorts of students.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some are in the stage of understanding what scholarships are and defining that in their own words. And some are on the stage of applying for their 10th one because they've been awarded thousands of dollars in the past. In those cohorts of similar interests and stages of learning, I do check-ins. And the reason I check in with the cohort is because that gives me some information in a group of people, whereas the amount of time it would take me to check in on 50 students
mm-hmm.
is quite high. I wish I can do that, and I think students do deserve that. This is why I brought up the stopgap measure, right? Because if we just funded education properly, we would actually give the students the attention they deserve. But since it's not happening, that change is not happening anytime soon, even though this is the year of the strikes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, let's see, maybe we can. But I measure my effectiveness in the experiences of students.
Mm-hmm.
So if students are sharing with me, and sometimes they won't, right? But if students are sharing with me that it's their first time they've applied for scholarships and or internships or fellowships, which are equally as important and valuable, that's a win for me, right? Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
So is that what you're hoping to achieve for the participating students?
Yeah, big time. Our foundation does a lot of heavy lifting to do a ton of fundraising to make these scholarships possible. When I went to San Jose State, we still used the same application called My Academic Works. 100%, there were way less scholarships at San Jose State. Same portal, right? It's just the fundraising team probably is less staffed. But here at Foothill and De Anza Community District, the fundraising is top notch. Like we have a ton of money here. And for students who get really excited about that, there's also a ton of external scholarships that they can tap into, right? I have checks sitting on my desk waiting to be processed. I share this with you, maybe one of your first days here, because now that you have that information, right? And you can make a decision on that. But for students who are just getting into it, I would prioritize the internal ones on Academic Works and their My Portal. For the students who are a little more advanced and eager, please do your research. I have a list. I have a vetted list, meaning I search these up and I know about these for external opportunities. They're worth considering.
Okay. And finally, Henry, could you just like just you know briefly just tell me why should Foothill students care about the workshop, and you know, and especially what is something that you would like to you know tell these students who are considering attending the scholarship workshop.
In my email signature that most people probably don't get to, I think I say something along... Do you know what I say in that red text?
Actually, I can pull it up.
Yeah, we can incorporate your voice. I would love this audio file because I think...
Because
I have a podcasting platform myself. It should be the last line. And if you could read that, I think your voice is always more interesting than mine.
So it's the last line, it's like right under like the whole like
the red.
So it's like when students are safe, respected, valued, and cared for, they read, write, question, make discoveries, learn, share, grow.
Yeah, that's true, right? That's the work. So the question then it becomes for us, how do we get students to be safe, right? We have Owl's Nest. We have some student services that can help that. But like within classroom spaces, and for us, it's not a classroom, it's a workshop. Mm-hmm. But in the workshop, how do we get students to not just feel like they're respected and seen and heard and valued, but like literally, how do we design activities so that we do care for the students, under our wing?
Right.
How do we value them?
Mm-hmm.
How do we show that? Because I do think those are essential for them to do the reading, writing, questioning, making discoveries, learning, sharing, and growing necessary. And we really, really need this, right? Because I don't know if you noticed, there's major problems in this world right now.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's income inequality, we have a lot of crises, right? Opioid crisis in San Francisco. We're going to need the next generation of young adults. And if you're not young, we're going to need the next generation of adults. You can include yourself, right? Because if you're listening to this, I believe you can change. To develop rare and valuable skills to not only set yourself and your family up for success, but also to think a little bit about community, right? And so that's what we need.
Yeah, thank you, Henry. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Emilio.
That concludes
I had
it.
So much fun. I can't wait for the next one of these. This is the most fun I've had in this apartment.
Really? I'm glad.
I'm not even joking, dude.